You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Last week, the first phase of the Royal Commission of Inquiry into New Zealand's COVID response was officially released to the public. The report looked at the lockdowns, the border response, and vaccine mandates, and made 39 recommendations on how New Zealand could plan for future infectious disease outbreaks more effectively. The inquiry concluded that New Zealand's COVID-19 response began successfully, bringing our fatality rates to among the lowest in the world. However, the report also said that many among the general public had concerns regarding the lockdowns and vaccine safety, and that the recent job cuts at Te Whatu Ora Health New Zealand would reduce New Zealand's preparedness for future pandemics and disease outbreaks. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March about his thoughts on the COVID-19 response inquiry. We also talked about a new initiative by the government to get the people off the job seeker benefit and into work, as well as a new directive by Waka Kotahi, the New Zealand Transport Agency, to increase public transport fares. To start off, what do you think the main takeaways from the recent COVID-19 inquiry were?
Yeah, look, if we put aside the tinfoil hats of the New Zealand First Act national parties, the inquiry actually found what many public health experts have told us for some time, and that we need a well-resourced public health system to deal with any future pandemics. And this is not new information. We've known this since the early 20th century when we've had to deal with the Spanish flu. And we, of course, now know this once again after dealing with COVID-19 that killed countless of people and disabled countless of people across the world.
Are there any areas where you feel New Zealand's pandemic response fell short?
Yeah, I mean, there are several areas we were critical while the pandemic was at its peak, particularly when it comes to equitable access to services for Maori and Pacifica people. And then there's also issues around economic responses to put people into jobs that created a two-tier welfare system and entrenched inequality. And so, of course, our government's response could have been better. We were always very vocal about that. But right now, the focus needs to be on resourcing our public health system rather than dismantling it, as the current government is doing.
Some of the inquiry's recommendations included strengthening government coordination for pandemic preparedness, creating a government-wide pandemic plan and response structure, and strengthening public health measures for a pandemic scenario. Do you think that our government is on track for following through with these recommendations and preparing New Zealand for future pandemics?
Our government is literally allowing frontline workers in the health system to go unemployed and refusing to invest in things like quality hospitals for the Otago region. So no, we're not preparing for a future pandemic right now. We're not investing in the things that keep us safe from a global pandemic. That also helps us prepare, for example, if there was to be things like a measles outbreak here in Aotearoa too. And I think these are all really critical things we should be planning ahead. That the more we're planned, the less frantic our response will need to be once the next pandemic comes, because it will. And scientists have warned us that it's not a matter of if, but if when we will have a pandemic in the future. And it's not scaremongering. It's just the reality of the modern world we're living in, where pathogens are evolving relatively quickly because of the interconnectedness we have in our world.
And lastly, how do you think New Zealand's current health system would be impacted if we faced another pandemic or infectious disease outbreak on the scale of COVID?
Well, we already saw with COVID how our health system was stretched to the point of almost collapse. And right now, with our public healthcare system being weaker than it ever was, and with more redundancies than we've seen in recent years, we would be left extremely vulnerable, and we would be leaving some of our most vulnerable populations when it comes to pandemics, the elderly, disabled people, people on low income, Maori Pacifica communities who've been underserved by the health system, way more at risk of any new infectious diseases that may be coming into our shores.
All right, moving on to the next topic. The government recently announced a new initiative to get job seeker beneficiaries off the benefit and into work. As part of the initiative, up to 70,000 job seekers would be given a case manager who would provide them with personalized job plans and a work readiness needs assessment to look at possible barriers to their employment. Do you think that this new initiative will help get people off the benefit and into work?
Yeah, like if we cut the PR from the government around what this actually is, I think we've got to scratch the surface and look that this is actually just another excuse to sanction beneficiaries. We've got to look into it with the context that working income staffers already overloaded with trying to address extreme poverty and things like hardship grants. And it ignores the evidence that actually if we want to set people up to be in a position to find good work and be the best selves, we need to lift incomes above the poverty line. And that is absolutely not happening with this government. It's actually the opposite. And the evidence doesn't show that having sanctions regimes that strip people of their ability to survive alongside these so-called check-ins actually has an evidential basis to supporting people into employment.
So are you saying that the individual case managers provided in this initiative won't help beneficiaries and will just add another layer of scrutiny to implement sanctions?
That's what I am saying. And we've already had intensive case managers, intensive case management in place for people. The feedback that I've had from on the ground is that it doesn't work because the way that work and income operates is not from a strength-based position. It's not with the goal of eliminating poverty. It's with the goal of relentlessly pushing people into any job, no matter how unsuitable. And we saw it already in the government's PR stand-up that they were even saying to people that they expect them to literally uproot and relocate regions for literally any minimum wage job. And I don't think that actually is a plan that will work for families, it won't work for our local economies, and it will just simply cause more hardship and stress.
So just to reiterate, what changes need to be made to the job seeker benefit to actually get people off the benefit and into work?
Well, I think what we need to stop is actually this narrative that people on the benefit is an inherently bad thing. We've always had people on the benefit. Many of them have health conditions and they are disabled. And what we need to be focused on is lifting those benefits above the poverty line so that people are not stressing week to week just when it comes to surviving. And that way we unlock the potential in people to have the space and the time to sit down with support services who can connect them to employment. Those support services exist. Work and income could be doing that if they wanted to. But instead, what we've got is more layers of bureaucracy, more options to sanction beneficiaries, and a government that wants to keep them below the poverty line.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Waka Kotahi, the New Zealand Transport Agency, recently sent letters to local councils and transport authorities asking them to increase their private share of public transport costs. This means that local councils would need to increase the proportion of public transport funding from sources other than rates or government funding, which would inevitably drive up fares for commuters. So to start off, what are your thoughts on this and what are the impacts you think the directive from Waka Kotahi will have?
For a government that says that they care about the cost of living crisis, they are literally making it worse for people who rely on public transport to get to work and to get to school or simply move around the community. We should have a government that is willing to tax the wealthy few and invest that in our public services, including public transport, so that we can make public transport free and we can invest in the infrastructure to create a reliable and frequent public transport network. That is not what is happening right now. We're throwing billions and billions of dollars into expensive motorways projects that don't even have a good business case and at the same time punishing commuters of public transport.
Vanessa Brown, the acting group general manager for transport services at Waka Kotahi, said that the increase of private shares was needed to support the level of public transport expenditure currently being invested by the central government. Do you think that the government has been investing enough into public transport, as she's saying?
The government has been underinvesting in public transport. In fact, successive governments have done so. And it took the Greens being a government to start to change that around. The reality is that we need a government that actually takes our public transport system seriously. Anyone who visits from developed countries can see that New Zealand lacks things like interregional rail, that we don't have a properly functioning metro system, and that our bus system is unreliable. That is a direct result of underinvestment by successive governments. And the more we invest in public transport, the better we'll make it also for people who still need to use their cars on the road, because we'll free up traffic by enabling people to have more options to get to school, to get to work, or to simply get around their communities.
And lastly, are there any other ways that local councils and public transport authorities could boost their revenue without shifting the burden onto commuters and increasing fares?
Yeah, well, we could put a tax on wealth, for example, and central government could then better resource our councils to have better public transport. I know that options like a congestion charge have been explored, but there are tax revenue options available to the government, including ensuring that our wealthy few, the billionaires who are hoarding most of the wealth in this country, contribute a fair share so that everybody can do well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.